The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
On tonight's show, I cover college football's top 25, the NFL, Major League Baseball playoffs, NASCAR, the NBA lockout, top movies at the box office, Adele cancels her tour, and Tiger Woods gets dogged. All this and much, much more tonight on Unsigned, happening now. Hey, everybody. How's it going? My name is Ryan. Welcome to the another edition of the Unsigned Show. How you doing out there? It is Tuesday night, and you know what time it is. It's time to get the show rolling. I'll tell you what, I got a lot of stuff to cover. You know, college football, NFL, NASCAR, all kinds of stuff we're going to cover tonight. Now, I wasn't going to cover NBA until what happened last night happened. Now, I reported last week about the NBA. And that they, you know, canceled the preseason, and they're more than likely going to cancel the first 2 weeks of the season. Well, that has officially happened. Preseason and the first 2 weeks of the season are officially gone. No deal was reached last night in Manhattan between the players' union, Billy Hunter, Derek Fisher leading the players' union, and David Stern and Adam Silver leading the charge as the commissioner and the deputy commissioner for the NBA. Stern wiped out the first 2 weeks of the season. That's exactly 100 games. That's more than... After 7 hours of negotiation, failed to produce a new labor agreement to preserve the November 1 season opener. The cancellation marks the first work stoppage in the NBA since the 1998-1999 season, which reduced the season to a mere 50 games. They usually play 82. Clashing more over salary cap structure than economics, but still far apart on both sides. David Stern said both sides are very far apart on virtually all issues. We have a gulf that separates us. With every day that goes by, I think we need to look further into reductions and what's left of the season, he added. It does not look good for the NBA. David Stern said and stated that he was sorry to report and sad to report that he has canceled the first 2 weeks. We certainly hope it would never come to this. I think both sides have worked hard to get a better solution. We think we have made fair proposals. I'm sure the players think the same thing, but the gap is so significant that we cannot bridge them at this time. That is from Commissioner David Stern of the NBA. Union President Derek Fisher agreed and emphasized that missing any games puts the season in jeopardy. He also stressed with this lockout, it is not a lockout. It is a lockout and not a strike. He stressed that during his press conference last night in Manhattan. He stressed that it was a lockout and not a strike. At the owner's decision, it was the owner's decision to not be playing basketball come November 1st. This is not where we chose to be, he said. It is not a place where we want to be. It is a place that we thought we would be, unfortunately, and we were going to hold out until we have a fair deal reached in the NBA to play basketball. Now, with the cancellation of these 100 games in the NBA, it represents $83 million in ticket sales lost. That's before you even include concessions, souvenirs, before any car ever parks in a parking lot at a stadium. Deputy Commissioner Adam Silver said the league would lose hundreds of millions of dollars. Estimated loss for the first 2 weeks alone is $350 million. Major losses for the NBA. It doesn't look like it's going to end at 2 weeks. I'm sorry. They have no other meetings planned. Billy Hunter and Derek Fisher are going back to Los Angeles. David Stern is meeting with the owner sometime later this week. No other meetings are scheduled. I expect this to go, unfortunately, longer and longer. You know what? This doesn't, and I alluded to this several months ago, alluded to it last week as well, that this doesn't just hurt the fans. I'm a fan of the NBA, as everyone knows. I've done a show for a little while. I'm a huge fan of the NBA. Not everybody is. And a lot of people are like, you know what? So what? NFL's in full swing. College football is great. Baseball playoffs have been phenomenal. World Series is right around the corner. College basketball is going to be starting soon. So, you know, the NBA is losing out. Losing out big time. And now that both sides are losing money, I think it's going to be even harder to come to an agreement. I really do. Now, here's my take on this. Now, the players want 53% of the total revenue. The owners want them to have 47%. But a 50-50 idea was proposed to the players yesterday in Manhattan on a seven-hour meeting. The players rejected that. The owners have given up on guaranteed contracts. Are still going to have those. They've given up on the hard salary cap. They're, you know, still going to have the flex cap with the luxury tax. The player contracts are negotiable at this point as far as the length of contracts is concerned with the NBA. Now, first, I was for the players when this whole thing started. Now I'm swinging the other way. I really am. I mean, the owners have backed off again on hard salary cap, rollback of salaries to the previous CBA agreement. They have offered a flexible luxury tax for going over the salary cap. They still have guaranteed contracts intact, and they're offering a 50-50 split in revenue, and the players have rejected all accounts. Now the players have gone and taken it to a social network on Twitter and have asking the people to stand behind them. This is probably the most ridiculous thing I have seen in sports and when it comes to labor disputes in my time. The NBA guys are looking out for themselves and their lavish lifestyles, their huge mansions, their expensive cars, their social network, and financial domination. This shows to me that these NBA players are so out of touch with the world and the economic struggles of the people in this country and the people who buy the tickets that make them and allow them to play basketball and make money. They are so far out of touch with this. And now here they are on Twitter making comments about vendors and security workers and all the other countless businesses and restaurants that are going to be losing money because there's no season. You know what? Those people don't make an average of $5 million a year. These people more than likely are living paycheck to paycheck, are going to see their hours reduced, and even worse, probably lose their jobs as well. Those people don't have millions and millions of dollars. They live paycheck to paycheck. I'm sick and tired of these self-entitled elitist crybabies trying to reach out to the common public for sympathy when they clearly are so far out of touch with the common people. This is coming from a guy, Ryan, here on Unsigned. I love basketball. I love the NBA. So if I'm this fired up about it, what is the casual fan thinking? What is the casual fan thinking? Now, I'm not letting the owners off the hook on this by any means. They're just as much as to blame for letting it get to the point that it is right now, and they have created these money-hungry, self-entitled athletes that we have in the NBA today. That's my take here on the NBA. Moving on tonight, my name is Ryan. This is Unsigned. Again, thanks for hanging out with me. Hey, sorry to get so fired up over the NBA thing. I'm passionate about the NBA. I love basketball, always have. And what happened last night is a travesty. I'm sorry. It's absolutely ridiculous the way the players are acting and, you know, seeking sympathy. I'm sorry, you know, your $5.5 million salary is just not cutting it, huh? Oh, I'm sorry. Too bad. Go to Europe and play, I guess. College football. Big, big weekend of college football. Let's start off with California taking on the Oregon, number 9 Oregon Ducks, Thursday night. This was not much of a contest. Oregon wins 43-15, and I was watching this game late on ESPN. Really a gruesome elbow injury by LaMichael James, the running back for Oregon, in the victory. This happened early in the fourth quarter, ended up being a dislocated right elbow, and when they showed it on the replay, I think everybody in the stadium went, when I saw it, I was like, oh, even the announcers, you know, they showed this dislocated elbow. It looked a lot more serious at the time. Now, it's obviously a dislocated elbow. He's going to miss some time, but he's going to be okay. He was having himself one heck of a game, LaMichael James. 239 yards rushing with a pair of touchdowns. And this was early in the fourth quarter, so he still had a whole other quarter to go. And this happened on the 3-yard line when the injury happened, so he was more than likely, if not injured, going to get another touchdown on that game and some more yards, no doubt about it. Now, the Oregon Ducks 43-15 over California. College game day is going to be in Eugene for a Pac-12 showdown versus Arizona State. That should be a good one. Occupy game day. Boise State just rolling right along steady as she goes, 57-7 over the Utah Utes. Now, this is the big game, the Red River rivalry. Number 3, Oklahoma taking on the undefeated Texas, ranked number 11. This was a no contest. The Red River rivalry was set at high noon in Texas at the Cotton Bowl, and Texas got the horn all day long. Oklahoma making a statement. They really should remain number one all over Texas, 55-17. It was not close from the get-go. Georgia Tech keeps their season right along, winning 21-16 over Maryland, who has really struggled since that season opener at home against Miami. West Virginia, 43, UConn, 16. Big win for the Mountaineers. South Carolina, all over Kentucky. Kentucky is like just the team you beat up on in SEC football, aren't they? 54-3. Now, South Carolina also announced today that their senior quarterback, Stephen Garcia, was released from the team today after repeatedly failing to adhere to team rules about drugs and alcohol. This has been his sixth chance. He was suspended five other times in his 5 years at South Carolina. He's officially lost his starting job last week. And I guess Stephen Garcia just said, hell with it. I'm not the starter anymore. It's my senior season. We're halfway through the year. Heck with it. I'm done. You know, I just wonder if there's going to be a documentary somewhere, a documentary film about Stephen Garcia and the guy who, you know, obviously a very, very gifted player and led South Carolina to their very first SEC championship and their very first SEC title game last season. Really never reached his full potential. Really sad to see, unfortunately, his playing days in college are over at South Carolina, but they remain in the top 25. Florida State is a sinking ship. I don't know what's going on in Tallahassee. Ever since that loss to Oklahoma, they have been out of whack and have dropped out of the top 25. They lose to Wake Forest 35-30. The Fighting Illini, Illinois over Indiana 41-20. They take on Ohio State next week. Clemson, again, another big win. 36-14 over rival Boston College. They do lose their starting quarterback with a hip injury in this game. It is said that he will play against Maryland this coming Saturday. Clemson looks very good as hopefully this quarterback of theirs, Boyd, is able to come back from this hip injury. Louisiana State, LSU, all over Florida, 41-11. LSU is awesome. And one of the coolest plays you're probably ever going to see, Les Miles, the riverboat gambler that he is, with a classic fake punt, and the punter ends up scoring a touchdown. Well, at least you thought it was a touchdown. The punter gets called for taunting, and it's a spot foul. It's a new rule in the NCAA that any taunting with the football or gesture of hands on the field is a spot foul for the offense. So the touchdown gets called back. LSU gets the ball right around the 3 or 4 yard line. I think it's really... not a very good rule. It's actually kind of a stinky rule. It's a stinky, stinky rule. It's a punter. Come on. How often is this punter going to get a chance to score a touchdown? It was a well-designed play, and it wasn't like he was high-stepping or anything like that. He showed the ball a little bit, and he scored. I don't like the call, but LSU was rolling anyway, 41-11 over the Gators. Arizona State with a big win, 35-14. Kansas taking on Oklahoma State. Kansas. They are not a good football team. 70-28, Oklahoma State rolling big time. Probably the game of the day was Virginia Tech and Miami of Florida at Virginia Tech. I tell you, well, this is a very exciting game. I caught this game Saturday afternoon. Very highly contested ball game. Back and forth, back and forth. Virginia Tech ends up getting the win 35-38 in favor of the Hokies. Kansas State beats Missouri. Missouri really having a bad year at this point, losing their second game, 24-17 in favor of Kansas State, who is undefeated in the Big 12. Vanderbilt taking on Alabama. Vanderbilt's like Kentucky in the SEC. They just get beat on every week. Alabama 34, Vanderbilt 0. Arkansas, a team I really like, beating last year's defending champion Auburn 38-14. Arkansas, I think, is a major threat in the SEC. Baylor continues their winning ways, 49-26. Robert Griffin III, the quarterback for Baylor, 212 yards and a touchdown. Really a modest day for him. Usually he's throwing, you know, 3-4 touchdowns for 400 yards. So Baylor getting a big win. Texas Tech versus Texas A&M. Now, obviously, we know Texas A&M has lost two games, giving up leads, one to Oklahoma State and then another one to Arkansas the week before. They hold on in this one and win 45-40. Side note, Texas A&M team buses were vandalized in Lubbock, Texas. Texas A&M athletic director Bill Bryan said on his Twitter account, "Someone vandalized our buses." He wrote, "Excrement inside and outside of the windows, and they spray painted vulgarities on the side." Classy, Texas A&M. Very classy. Michigan beating Northwestern 42-24. Michigan is taking on Michigan State this coming weekend. Be interesting to see. Michigan has started 5-0, 6-0 the last couple times. Amazing when they get into competitive play in the Big Ten if they're able to keep their winning ways. Stanford steady as it goes, just like Boise State, winning quietly. Andrew Luck, 370 yards, 3 touchdown passes. Stanford wins big time over Colorado, 48-7. Now, here's a primetime game. Nebraska taking on Ohio State, a struggling Ohio State team. Ohio State is winning this game 27-6 with about 7 minutes to go in the third quarter. And you're thinking, well, Ohio State maybe has found the mixer. Braxton Miller had, 70, 80 yards passing, 70, 80, 90 yards rushing. Carlos Hyde, Ohio State, had 104 yards, 2 touchdowns. All of a sudden, Braxton Miller turns the ball over. They score. Okay. Still over a 2-score game. Then Braxton Miller gets hurt in the next series, and Joe Bowserman comes in, who goes 1-for-10 in the game for 13 yards. The guy's completed 2 passes in 2 road games when he went to Miami. So he's 2-for-21 in passing with a total of 26 yards. Needless to say, let's hope Braxton Miller can play next week if you're an Ohio State fan. Ohio State blows the lead with 7 minutes left in the third quarter, the biggest comeback in history for Nebraska. And their very first Big Ten win comes over Ohio State. Joe Bowserman, again, Ohio State needs answers and answers fast. The Buckeyes, again, were outcoached and outplayed down the stretch, giving up 28 unanswered points. When the last time you thought Ohio State and their defense would give up 28 unanswered points? Ohio State drops to 0-2 in the Big Ten and 3-3 overall. Ohio State, now, I think it's safe to say Luke Fickell is probably not going to be the coach next year at Ohio State. Ohio State has had one season since 1966 that they finished below 500. Let that soak in. Last time they finished below 500 was 1988. This is their schedule. They go to Illinois, who's undefeated. They play Wisconsin, Penn State, and they have to go to Michigan, all on the schedule. I think Ohio State may be looking for a sub-500 record for the first time since 1988 and the second time in school history since 1966. And I said it last week, anybody missed Jim Tressel's play calling yet? Because I have a feeling that he would have ran the ball a couple times here in the third quarter and kicked a long field goal or tried to stop the bleeding. Luke Fickell does not and settles for a punt. I think that's the difference that game as far as momentum is concerned. Ohio State, big concerns there. Now, here's your AP Top 25. Now, the BCS poll comes out next week, and we'll feature that here on the show. No changes at the top of the order in the top 10, but here we go from 25 up. Houston, now first time being ranked this year at number 25. Auburn, with 2 losses, still in the top 25, very interesting, at number 24. Michigan State finds himself back in the top 25 at number 23. Texas drops from 11 all the way to 22. Texas A&M at number 21. Baylor at 20. Virginia Tech at 19. Arizona State, number 18. Kansas State, 17. Illinois, 16. South Carolina, 15th in the country. Nebraska stays exactly where they are, number 14. West Virginia moves up a couple spots at number 13. Georgia Tech at number 12, Michigan number 11, then your top 10, Arkansas, Oregon, Clemson, Stanford, Oklahoma State, Boise State, Wisconsin, Oklahoma, Alabama, LSU, all in the top 10. The only two teams in the top 10 with one loss is Oregon and Arkansas. You have to see they're on the outside looking in, more than likely. Stanford and Oregon are going to play. Alabama and LSU are going to play. Oklahoma and Oklahoma State are going to play. So you have some teams that are, have no blemishes right now, and Oklahoma is sitting pretty, and you have to think Wisconsin at the number 4 spot. So we could be looking at a Wisconsin-Oklahoma national title. Wouldn't surprise me. Oklahoma and Wisconsin are right there. All they got to do is win out. That's college football here on Unsigned. My name is Ryan. Thanks for hanging out with me. I appreciate it. It's been a very, very interesting week of Major League Baseball. Your Major League Baseball recap coming to you right now. The Yankees lose Game 5 at home against the Tigers. The Phillies lose Game 5 against the wild card St. Louis Cardinals. Two teams thought to be in the hunt for winning the whole kit and caboodle are gone early in the playoffs. That sets up the Rangers at the Texans and also the Brewers taking on the Cardinals. Now, tell you what, last night in Rangers Stadium, well, a great, great baseball game. It goes 11 innings, and then you have this one by Nelson Cruz for the game winner.
This ball ends it.
Listen to that crowd there at Texas Rangers Stadium. It is electric at that ballpark. Nelson Cruz with the first ever Grand Slam walk-off win in playoff history in the bottom of the 11th. Unbelievable. Detroit right now down 2-0 in this series. They're playing in Detroit right now, and it looks like that game is tied up currently heading in to the top of the fifth inning. So Detroit definitely obviously has to win the next two in Detroit to really push the series. Now on the other side in the National League, the Milwaukee Brewers, who end up winning their very first series since 1982, their very first playoff win series against the Diamondbacks since 1982, and one of their players is a little overly excited. Nothing like Major Morgan from the Milwaukee Brewers dropping the F-bomb on national TV on TBS, jubilated over the win. But the Brewers at home last night against the St. Louis Cardinals got bombarded and rocked by Albert the Machine Pujols. Albert Pujols has three doubles and one home run and five RBIs and a 12-3 butt-kicking of the Brewers last night, evening that series up 1-1, heading back to St. Louis. That is going to be a very, very good series. The Cardinals, again, Albert Pujols, when he hits like that and plays like he did last night, he can take over games. And don't be shocked if the Cardinals, if he gets hot and keeps hitting like this, the Cardinals are going to be tough to beat for the Brewers. That's going to be a fun series. A lot of big bats in that game or in that series. That's been your Major League Baseball playoff recap. Hey, I want to head off the path. We do this every week on the show. This is where we talk about non-sports related topics. Going to take a break from sports. Not a lot to cover tonight on Off the Path, but a couple stories I thought, you know, definitely worth mentioning. First, I want to lead off with Adele. She cancels her U.S. tour due to illness. Vocal cord damage forces the singer to scrap her dates of her tour for the second time this year. Again, forced to cancel due dates involving her vocal cords. Her U.S. dates were scheduled to begin Friday, October 7th in Atlantic City, and continue through October 21st in Texas, but she canceled the entire upcoming sold-out run effective immediately. "Singing is literally my life," she said. "It's my hobby, my love, my freedom, and now my job," said Adele in a statement released by her record label, Columbia. "I have absolutely no choice but to recuperate properly and fully, or risk damaging my voice forever." The 23-year-old Britain singer explains that she is devastated in having to cancel the tour dates and apologizes sincerely to her fans, knowing how inconvenient and disappointing it must be for them to not have a chance and have to change their plans. Furthermore, she says that she will start vocal rehab as soon as she is given clearance from her doctors. "I will be back, and I'm going to smash the ball out of the park once I begin touring again." Sad news, because I really think Adele is a really great musician. The woman has a wonderful voice. The second album is phenomenal. So best to her. Hopefully, you know, she can repair her vocal cords. She can come back and do a big-time tour and, you know, allow people who really love her music a chance to see her. I think that would be great. In other music news, very tragic news. Ex-Weezer bassist Mikey Welsh was found dead in a Chicago hotel room this past Saturday, October 8th. Staff at the Ruffalo Hotel discovered the body of Welsh, who's 40 years old. He failed to make his 1 p.m. checkout. No foul play is expected, and the cause of death at this point is known and is a suicide, unfortunately. He had an eerie tweet dated September 26th. Welsh wrote, "Dreamed I died in Chicago. Heart attack in my sleep," he wrote. He said, "I need to write my will." Welsh made his live debut with Weezer when they returned to the stage in the summer of 2000 for a string of festival dates, including a run on the Warped Tour. Shortly thereafter, they recorded their third album, Weezer, most probably known as the Green Album, which yielded their hits Hash Pipe and Islet in the Sun, in which Welsh is the only album he did with the band and really is their best album they ever did. Welsh quit Weezer in 2001 for really vague reasons, which were later revealed to be a nervous breakdown amid other mental issues. In August of that year, he sought treatment at a psychiatric hospital, following a possible drug-assisted suicide attempt in 2001. So obviously something he's been struggling with a long time. We've alluded to this on the show quite a bit with, you know, not just music stars, but anybody in general that you may know who may be struggling with, you know, depression or anything, you know, drugs, alcohol. It's definitely, you know, definitely worth taking the time to address those needs and get them the proper help they need. And that's, you know, this isn't a PSA announcement by any means here on the show. I just, you know, I think everybody can relate onto these type of stories or has, you know, been close to stories like this. And again, it shows you that, you know, maybe we don't take these things as serious as maybe we should when it comes to mental illness in this country. Too many sad stories regarding these type of scenarios. Now, in other news, Welsh successfully launched his second artistic career, transforming into a visual arts artist, and had, to a degree, a lot of success. His work appears on Burton's Snowboards and also the album cover for the band Twin Berlin. Welsh had planned to catch Weezer's show at Riot Fest in Chicago that Sunday. Unfortunately, obviously, he committed suicide October the 8th and was found dead in his hotel room. Very sad news for you know, rock and roll. Now let's move on to brighter news tonight here on Unsigned, the top movies at the box office. We do this every week on the show, starting with number 10. We'll work our way up. The movie Contagion, again, still in the top 10 at 2.9 million. What's Your Number at 3.1 million. The movie The Dream House with Daniel Craig, 4.4 million. The Lion King 3D, 4.5 million. Courageous at 4.8 million. The movie 50-50 with Seth Rogen at 5.6 million. The movie Moneyball, based on a true story, 7.4 million. Dolphin Tale, also based on a true story, at 9.1 million. The IDs of March, which looks like a great film with George Clooney, at 10.4 million. And Real Steel at 27.3 million. I've seen Rocky. I don't need to see Rocky with robots. That's just my take on it, although I have heard that it is a feel-good movie. So if you're looking for just a good fashion feel-good movie, I guess Real Steel is the real deal. Ba-dum-tsh. This has been Off the Path. My name is Ryan. This is Unsigned. Again, thanks for hanging out with me. Hope you're having as much fun as I am. Now let's get into the main mix, and that is the NFL on the gridiron. Now before we get into the games and my picks from the last week, the NFL lost a true legend this week. And, you know, I poked fun at Al Davis in his later years. But when you really look at the grand scheme of what this man accomplished in his career, it is bar none. Al Davis's career in football dates back to 1950. He served as a coach, a general manager, and even commissioner of the once American Football League, the AFL, that helped. And he also helped merge those organizations in 1970 before orchestrating a power play that would lead him to becoming the Raiders' principal owner by 1976. Under Al Davis's ownership, Oakland won three Super Bowls, played in five. Davis also holds the record for most Hall of Fame induction speeches given, which is a total of nine. Nine from players and coaches who worked under him, including John Madden and the late Gene Upshaw. Davis was inducted to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1992. Davis helped revolutionize the offense in football in the early 1960s, implementing an aggressive passing game that referred to as the vertical game. Davis also fabled the mantra, just win, baby. The Raiders did that for most of Davis's tenure, posting 34 seasons of 500 or better out of his 48 years with the franchise. Al Davis, again, unbelievable what he did. You know, you look at the way the NFL is structured now as far as the passing game is concerned. I mean, that's because of Al Davis. I mean, you know, these passing, you know, you got these guys passing for 300-400 yards week in and week out, three or four touchdowns. That's because Al Davis, you know, the vertical game, he you know, he created that aggressive passing game that we see in the NFL today and where that game, where the game has gone. And he was also ahead of his time before the Rooney Rule and all those things in the NFL as well. He was the first person to ever hire a black head coach in the modern era. That was Art Shell in 1988. He hired the first Latino coach. That was Tom Flores. And he also hired the very first women CEO, Amy Trasick, who is also still with the Raiders today. He was known to be very, very loyal and influential across the league. He will be missed. There will probably be another Al Davis. There's no question about that. Al Davis, truly one of a kind. The NFL lost a true great this past weekend. Now, getting into my picks, I did not have a good week. My first sub 500 week as far as picks. That leaves me 44-31 overall. And let's start with the Raiders and Texans. I thought the Texans would win this game, obviously coming off a very emotional performance for the Raiders, losing Al Davis on Saturday. Obviously changes things up a little bit. Texans, not only did they lose the game, they also lost their best defensive player, and that is Mario Williams with a pectoral tear. He is out for the season. Andre Johnson, again, is going to be out for a couple weeks with a very severe hamstring pull. And, again, the Raiders, they just win, baby, as Al Davis would say. Safety Michael Huff picks off Matt Schaub in the end zone to seal the win as time expires. The Raiders get a big road win, 25-20. Raiders are for real, man. I think the Raiders are a very good ball club. They're coming along. They have a lot of long way to go, as Hugh Jackson, their head coach, will tell you. But getting a win in Houston on the road is very big at 3-2 right now. The Bengals heading to Jacksonville, the battle of two rookie quarterbacks. The Bengals are now 3-2 under rookie quarterback Andy Dalton and rookie wide receiver A.J. Green out of Georgia. He's looking to be a superstar in the NFL. He had a big-time game. Bengals win a big-time road game, 30-20. Buffalo, Philadelphia. The nightmare in Philly has now officially reached Elm Street. They had five turnovers in Buffalo the weekend. Michael Vick throws four interceptions. Fred Jackson of the Buffalo Bills runs wild, 139 yards on the ground, 85 yards receiving. The Bills get a big-time win at home, and the Eagles are in turmoil. Bills win 31-24. Seahawks, Giants. I don't know anybody. I picked the Giants. I don't know many people that thought the Seahawks would win this thing. The Seahawks are 1-11 all time when traveling to the East Coast and playing 1 o'clock games. But the G-men found a way to throw the game away to the Seahawks, literally. Eli Manning throws three interceptions in the game, one of which was returned for 90 yards and a touchdown late in the fourth quarter when the Giants were driving to take the lead. Seahawks win big, 36-25. Cardinals, Vikings, Kevin Cobb versus Donovan McNabb, two former Eagle quarterbacks. But it was really all day. Adrian Peterson, he had the kind of day that you know this guy can have. Three rushing touchdowns, 122 yards on the ground, dragging defenders all over the field, dragging rookie Patrick Peterson 7 yards into the end zone for a second score. The Vikings get their first win of the season, and really what is a beatdown of the Arizona Cardinals, 34-10 in Minnesota. Titans Steelers. You know what? I'm going to have to eat crow this week on the Steelers. I said, yeah, we're going to watch the Steelers crumble before our eyes. Yeah, right. Steelers roll big time. Big Ben comes out, throws five touchdown passes. Pittsburgh obviously in a bad mood after a rough loss in Texas. They roll big time at home, 38-17 over the Titans, who have not been able to get Chris Johnson on the go as of yet. Wonder if it'll ever happen. Chiefs heading to Indianapolis. I thought the Colts would probably get their first win here. Curtis Painter and the Colts at home. Taking on a beat-up Kansas City team. But Kansas City giving credit behind Matt Castle with four touchdown passes, and the Colts get shut out in the second half by the KC defense. 28-24 win for the Chiefs. The Colts are obviously in the Colts are just not good without Peyton Manning. It's amazing what one man really means to that team. Curtis Painter has played okay. Not great, not anywhere by Peyton Manning standards, no doubt about that. They are officially in the Andrew Luck sweepstakes, no doubt. The New Orleans Saints heading to Carolina. The Saints, again, Cam Newton and the Panthers are gamers. They are in every game. They give the Saints all they can handle. Roman Harper, I don't know if anybody saw this. Roman Harper gets a cheap shot on wide receiver Steve Smith after he scores a touchdown. Steve Smith, by the way, is not a guy you want to mess with. Who ends up basically grabbing Harper and shoving him to the ground and then picking up by his face mask. Steve Smith's a bad dude, man. I would not pick a fight with him. And I expect the next time, the league's going to have levy fines and all those things. That's fine. I credit Steve Smith for not taking any guff. And Roman Harper with a cheap shot, I think he'll think twice next time when Carolina comes to New Orleans. But the Saints do get the last say in this one, 30-27. Tampa Bay Buccaneers heading to San Francisco. Well, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were scheduled to play San Francisco, but they were definitely not in this game. They get throttled, an old-fashioned butt-kicking in San Francisco, 48-3. San Francisco and Alex Smith with three touchdown passes. The 49ers are now 4-1 and head to Detroit next week for a big-time NFC matchup. Who would have thought that, right? Unbelievable. Jets heading to Foxborough, their third game in a row on the road after an awful performance in Baltimore the week before. The Jets get division rival New England again at home, and the Jets ground and pound was actually flipped upside down on them. And Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, the law firm, and the Patriots, he runs for 136 yards and two touchdowns. The Patriots, again, get a nice win at home, 30-21. The Jets are now 2-3. And on the outside, looking in the AFC East, with the Bills at 4-1, New England at 4-1, is it possible the Jets miss the playoffs? Could happen. Chargers, Broncos. This is a classic AFC matchup here. The Chargers were really on cruise control in this game. Kyle Orton was just kind of floating along in mediocrity, as well as the Denver Broncos offense and their whole team for that matter. And then here comes Tim Tebow in the second half. Uh-oh. Tim Tebow sighting? Yep, Tim Tebow sighting. Fans are cheering, Tim Tebow, Tim Tebow. He comes in, you know, he throws 4-for-10 passing. He gets 79 yards, has 38 yards rushing, almost leads them to a comeback win. They get a bye week, so he's going to get 2 full weeks of preparation on the Denver Broncos offense. They announced today that he will be the starter when they go to Miami in 2 weeks. You know, fans always cheer for the backup quarterback when the starting quarterback is okay or not doing well. I say to this, to the fans that do that, be careful what you wish for, because there's a reason he's the backup quarterback. I'm sorry, there just is. I'm sure Tim Tebow is a nice guy. He seems to be a really nice guy. He had a great, phenomenal career in college. That doesn't necessarily translate to the NFL. Remains to be seen. I think obviously they're going to give him a shot. They're 1-4. The team's in disarray. They've got injuries galore. You might as well find out what you got there with Tim Tebow. Gutsy move. First year head coach. So you might as well find out. You're paying the guy, you know, a lot of money as a first round pick a couple years ago. Denver's in hamstring there. They pretty much have to make that call. I mean, they really do. Chargers win nonetheless. Chargers 4-1 in command of the AFC West. Sunday night football. This is a rematch of last year's playoff game. The Falcons had a good game plan and jumped out to a 14-point lead. And then they got away from their game plan, which is running Michael the Burner Turner and play action pass, thus giving Aaron Rodgers too many shots in the second half, and putting Rodgers on the field more than they really should. And their soft defense, Aaron Rodgers made them pay, and made them pay big time. 396 yards passing, 2 touchdown passes. The Packers scored 25 unanswered points, 19 that came in the second half. The Falcons, I think, again, much like the Jets, are in danger of being on the outside looking in the playoff picture here in a couple weeks. They have a very interesting schedule. They have Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers coming to town, and then they go to Detroit and play before their bye week, and then after that, their schedule does not get any easier. So the Falcons are in a must-win scenario here in the next couple weeks before they get into the bye week. Monday Night Football. Are you ready? Are you ready for some football? Well, Hank Williams Jr. obviously is no longer part of ESPN for Monday Night Football, but the Bears and Lions were in a NFC North showdown. This was anything but a pretty game. I think there was probably about 25 penalties in this game. It was ugly. The Chicago Bears alone had 9 false start penalties in the game. Horrendous. And their offensive line should be ashamed of themselves for the way they perform. Jay Cutler, you know, people who question his toughness, they can't question this guy's toughness. He was sacked 3 times a game. He was hurried 8 times, knocked down 11 times. I don't know how many other times he was running for his life most of the night. They had a rough night, to say the least. Now, the Lions, they have some serious weapons. Calvin Johnson, who, you know, again, is just having an amazing and really an all-time record-setting year. In the last 5 games, he has 9 touchdowns. Last night, he had 130 yards and another touchdown. The most by an NFL receiver in the first 5 games of the season is 9 touchdowns. Calvin Johnson holds that record and doesn't show any signs of slowing down at all. And then they get Javid Best, who has his best game as a pro, a breakout game, 116 yards on the ground. The Lions look the part and are undefeated. The only other undefeated team in the league is the defending champion Green Bay Packers. Those two teams are both in the NFC North, and they play one another Thanksgiving. Lions, Packers, Thanksgiving. Put that down. Have some turkey. Have some stuffing. Mashed potatoes. Put some gravy on it. Watch the Packers. Watch the Lions. And Thanksgiving it a little over a month away. Now, obviously, a lot can happen in a month and a half's time in the NFL, but these two teams are on a roll big time. I'm excited about the Thanksgiving game. I know we're quite a ways away, and the Lions have some. That Lions get San Francisco this week, and that leads us into our picks. First off, Panthers, Falcons. You know, I've been critical of Cam Newton when he was in Alabama. And I thought, you know, this kid's going to struggle, right? He has been unbelievable as a rookie. And I really think this Carolina team, they've been in every game they've played. they are gamers, and they are going to upset people. And I think this game heading to Atlanta, I mean, maybe I'm crazy, I don't know, but I'm saying Cam Newton in Carolina with Steve Smith in a big time upset. I'm sorry, the Falcons defense is not that good. Their secondary is soft. We saw that week after week after week. I think the Panthers upset the Falcons and really send them into a tailspin. I mean, the Falcons have lost more games this season than they did all last year. It does not look good for Atlanta. They have issues on defense and on the offensive line. Bills heading to the Meadowlands to take on the Giants. You know, a part of me wants to pick Buffalo in this. I'm really not sure. Buffalo went to Cincinnati a couple weeks ago, did not play well on the road. I'm going to take the G-men and a close one at home. Eagles, Redskins. The Eagles at 1-4 right now, heading on the road to Washington to play a division rival, coming off a bye week. Washington was on a bye week last week. Coming off a bye week at home with Mike Shanahan playing the Eagles, who I think it's in their heads now. You know, I really think that it's gotten to the coaching staff, it's gotten to their players, and I think that this is a must-win for Philadelphia. If you're a Philadelphia Eagles fan, you think you're going to try to make the playoffs, this is a must-win. I don't think it happens. I think the Redskins win at home, and Philadelphia heads will roll in Philly if that happens, but I'm calling the Redskins in a win coming out of a bye week. Jaguars going to Pittsburgh. I'm sorry, unless Maurice Jones-Drew has a career game, I'm taking the Steelers in this one. Rams coming off a bye week as well. Their reward for coming off a bye week, they get to go to Lambeau Field and play the red-hot Packers, who are undefeated. I'm taking the Packers in this one. 49ers taking on the Lions, what really could be the game of the week. Now, if you would have told me 6 weeks ago, hey, week six, 49ers-Lions is going to be a marquee matchup of the NFC, I would have been like, really? Seriously? Yeah, it turns out that it is. 49ers, Lions. I'm taking Lions at home with that front seven defense and the explosiveness that is their offense. Calvin Johnson, Javid Best, Matthew Stafford. They have a very nice chemistry, and I think they are an up-and-coming team, Detroit. I think they go 6-0. Colts heading to Cincinnati to take on the Bengals. The Colts are in the suck-for-luck sweepstakes. There's no doubt about it. The Bengals are looking to go 4-2 with rookie quarterback Andy Dalton. I think this game is not going to be pretty by any standards. It's going to be a sloppy football game, but I think the Bengals find a way to win it at home. The Cleveland Browns, again, coming out of a bye week, heading to Oakland. Oakland coming home for the first time since losing Al Davis. I think the young Browns defensive line, even though they're coming out of a bye week, they get Darren McFadden. That is not a recipe for success. Darren McFadden did not have a good game in Houston. I expect him to try to have a good game and then get him rolling and back on track. Darren McFadden is going to have a big game. I think the Browns have major issues on the right side of the offensive line, and the front seven of the Oakland Raiders are going to get to the quarterback. I just hope Colt McCoy survives the game. I think it's an ugly week for the Browns and Oakland Raiders big time. Texans heading to Baltimore. This is, if the Texans are going to do it, it's going to happen now. They're losing Andre Johnson. They lost to Mario Williams for the season on defense. Baltimore coming out of a bye week as well. I'm taking the Ravens at home. It's Ray Rice all day for the Ravens. I just think that the Texans, you know, with the injuries, I'm just not sold. Cowboys, Patriots. The Cowboys also in a bye week head to Foxborough to take on New England. The Patriots have looked very, very good, and I think that defense is going to gradually get better as the season goes on under Bill Belichick. I'm taking New England in Foxborough at home against the Cowboys. Hey, let's face it, the Patriots do not lose very often when it comes to home games in Foxborough, regardless of who they're playing. Now we have the Saints heading to Tampa. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers got humbled last weekend in San Francisco, no doubt about it. This is a division rival game. The New Orleans Saints are as good as anybody in the NFL that no one really is talking about. The Saints are good. They can score with anybody. I think the Saints win this thing in Tampa in a very close one. Vikings-Bears Sunday night. I think the Bears have major issues on the offensive line. If you watch any of that game Monday night, the Bears have major issues on the offensive line, and I think that defensive line, that front seven, and especially in the safety in their corners, that Bears defense is just not what it used to be. I think the Vikings start get going here, and they start to get on a roll. Adrian Peterson is having a great year. I think Donovan McNabb is starting to come around. I think the Vikings win in Chicago Sunday night. Now we have the Monday night game. Are you ready? Are you ready for some football? Yes, I am. Dolphins, Jets, Dolphins coming out of a bye week. They're missing their starting quarterback, Chad Henne, who's out for the year. I think the Jets finally get a home game. They haven't been home since week one. I think this is crucial for the Jets to get a win, and I think they do. They need to keep pace with Buffalo and New England. And that's been your NFL gridiron. Moving on tonight, I get some NASCAR news. Five-time defending NASCAR Sprint Cup champion. Say that five times fast. The five-time defending NASCAR Sprint Cup champion dominated Sunday at Kansas Speedway, weathering a series of late cautions and holding off Casey Kane to win his the first time since April. Johnson struggled through the first two races in NASCAR's version of the postseason and was 10th in the standings heading to Dover. A second-place finish last weekend gave Johnson confidence, and this first win since Talladega moves him to third in the chase for the Sprint Cup behind Carl Edwards and Kevin Harvick. So look for Jimmy Johnson to try to get another win in NASCAR. Six races left in the season. I think it's going to come down to the final checkered flag. Formula One news, Sebastian Vettel wrapped up his second straight Formula One championship this past Sunday, finishing third behind Jenson Button in the Japanese Grand Prix. Needing just 1 point to take the title if Button won the race, Vettel earned 15 points to clinch the title, and with four races left, the 24-year-old German star, the series' youngest two-time champion in history. So very good stuff for Formula One racing. Now, here's an interesting story. Here's a woman who gives birth after running the Chicago Marathon. Amber Miller felt contractions just minutes before crossing the finish line at the Chicago Marathon. A few hours later, the suburban Chicago woman, who slogged her way through 26.2 miles while she was 39 weeks pregnant, delivered a healthy baby girl. This is her quote. "For me, it wasn't anything out of the ordinary. I was running up until that point anyway," Miller told the Associated Press in an interview from the hospital where she was recovering on Monday. "I'm crazy about running," Amber Miller says. Sunday's marathon was the eighth for the 27-year-old, who has been running for more than a dozen years. She found out she was pregnant with her second child days after signing up for the Chicago race and decided to play it by ear whether or not she would be involved with the race. "When the baby hasn't been born yet by Sunday, she got clearance from her doctor to run half of the race. She completed the full race, walking and half running, drinking lots of fluids and eating along the way. She finished the race in 6 hours and 25 minutes and 50 seconds, much slower than her usual time, but still content with her finish. Lots of people were cheering me on," she said. "People were chanting, 'Go, pregnant lady.' I was expecting negative comments." She says, "I don't remember any." If this is not Miller's first marathon running while pregnant. In May, at the Winchester Women Race in Wisconsin Marathon, she ran 4 hours and 23 minutes while 17 weeks pregnant with her daughter. In 2009, she ran at the Indianapolis Marathon 4 hours and 30 minutes while she was 18 weeks pregnant with her first son, Caleb. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Could you imagine? I mean, obviously, I've never been pregnant because I'm a guy, but my wife is pregnant, and I can't imagine. Mike, I don't know if you want to chime in on this or not here. Can you imagine your wife running pregnant? Or I just can't imagine. I mean, a marathon running 26 miles pregnant. That's unbelievable.
All I can say is bring him up because the water's going to break.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard of women walking around and try to get their water to break, but, you know, jogging 26 miles is probably an extreme way to go about it. Credit to Amber Miller. Unbelievable. Heck of a performance. She did, again, have a baby girl who was born healthy. No complications whatsoever. 7 pounds, 13 ounces. So congratulations to her and her family. Very good stuff. Now, final story of the night here. Tiger Woods gets dogged. Tiger Woods was assaulted by a hot dog. It landed approximately 20 feet from him during the final round of the Fries.com Open on Sunday, but he was managed to walk away unscathed. Tiger Woods said, "Some guy just came running onto the green, and he had a hot dog." Woods said later on, "I don't know how he tried to throw it, but I was focusing on my putt. Then he started yelling. Next thing I know, he was laying on the ground and looked like he wanted to be arrested. Now, here are my thoughts, and I want to be frank here. I mean, if you're going to throw a hot dog, make sure it's plump and cooked. But then again, you should not feed the tiger. I mean, come on. Giving Tiger Woods a wiener is uncalled for. The ballpark was frankly foul. If my Oscar Mayer had a first name, it would be T-I-G-E-R. My name is Ryan. This has been Unsigned. Hopefully you had a good, much fun as I've had tonight. I want to thank Mike for doing a wonderful job as always. Big news next week, we have a band from Champaign, Illinois by the name of Venatica. Very excited. These guys were on the Warped Tour a couple years ago. They've got 5 albums. They've been a band since about 2004. So definitely check out next week's show. It's going to be very, very fun. We're going to play some of the music and talk with a couple of guys from the band as well. So definitely check that out next week here on Unsigned. Very excited. And we'll also do our regular stuff, NFL, college football, and movies and all those things as well. So it's going to be a big, big time show next week. So definitely check that out. Also check out at Cooker Carolyn at Twitter. Check out her cookbook, over 45 different recipes, very good stuff on there. And hey, my name is Ryan. This is Unsigned. It seems harder to enjoy the finer things in life. Until next time, do so.